So welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Colin Shaw, who is the founder and CEO of Beyond Philosophy. Hi, Colin. How are you doing?
Hi. I'm absolutely wonderful. Thank you. Looking forward to this.
Excellent. So, Colin, for the benefit of our listeners and readers, can you tell us a bit about you and also a little bit about the work that you and Beyond Philosophy do?
Sure. So we've been doing customer experience work now since 2002. My background before that was working in corporate life, and my boss gave me a task which was to improve the customer experience, but to do it at least cost. And ever since then, I've been thinking of nothing else. So we set up Beyond Philosophy back in 2002. I've now written 6 books on the subject, and we pretty much work globally. And we effectively do 3 things. We do consultancy work, we do training, and we do specialized research.
Okay.
And as I say, I've had the ability to do that all over the globe.
Fantastic. Now, the reason for the podcast today is that you've just written a new book, which is just coming out now. So I think it's out sort of today or tomorrow, because the date of this is taking place is the 3rd of October. But it's called The Intuitive Customer, 7 Imperatives for Moving Your Customer Experience to the Next Level. So first of all, congratulations on the book, because I'm very excited about this interview, because I think we've known of each other for some time now, and it's the first time we've actually spoken. So congratulations on the book, and can you tell me a little bit more about the book and why you wrote it this time? Because, I mean, this is the 6th book or the 7th book?
Yeah. And I have to say, I think this is probably one of my most significant. And the reason I say that is because I fundamentally believe that that looking at customer behavior is that next level mm-hmm. that organizations need to get to. So the book is effectively about understanding customers at a much deeper level.
Right.
And therefore understanding them through understanding what's called behavioral economics.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure your listeners think to themselves that sounds very highfalutin and posh and all those other wonderful things, but behavioral economics is actually quite simple.
Yeah.
It's about how people behave and the effect on economics, money.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, that's what the book's about. It's really where customer experience meets behavioral economics.
Okay.
And looks into why people do things.
Perfect. So before we get into some of that sort of stuff and some of the insights in the book there that you delve into, throughout the book you're also going to mention this idea of companies sort of facing a glass ceiling, that's what you call it, in terms of the things that they can do to improve their customer experience. I mean, can you tell me a little bit more about what you mean by the glass ceiling and what is that? What's the situation you're seeing?
Yeah, I think what I'm seeing is that there are just so many organizations that are using the same thinking that they do today that they've done for years
mm-hmm.
Without progressing their thoughts. They're just trying to run faster, do things faster, quicker, cheaper. And we know that that's, you know, a recipe for disaster, basically. And therefore, this is why the whole concept of customer experience has come about. But now, if you look at customer experience, you know, most organizations solely still look at what we would call the rational parts of an experience.
Right.
So what the customer does, you know, the price they pay, the deliveries, etc. But the glass ceiling is that. They're only looking at the rational. Now, back in 2002, my first book, I started talking about an emotional experience. That started to catch on. I think they've got the glass ceiling is just looking at things from a rational perspective. They need to look at things in a much, much broader, deeper perspective to understand customers.
Okay. So this is almost a bit like you can only get so far doing the things that you've done in the past, and this is almost like the next level, as it were.
Yeah. So absolutely. So if you can imagine a glass ceiling, you can see where you want to get to. You yeah. just can't get there.
Yeah, sure.
And the reason you can't get there is because you don't have the knowledge, the skills to be able to get there.
Okay.
So what we're trying to outline in the book is what we think is those, you know, how to get there, and those things that people, the imperatives that people need to start to consider.
Okay. Now, so what I don't want to do is I don't want to going to go through all seven imperatives, because that sort of gives away a lot of the book. But there, I wondered if we could sort of dive into sort of a couple of them just to give people an idea and a flavor of what to expect from the book, if that's all right. And so
sure,
there were two that stood out for me. So I wonder if you can tell me a bit more about each of them in turn. I mean, so the first one was sort of imperative five, which talked about uncover the hidden causes and unintended consequences of customers wanting things to be easy. Can you tell me a bit about sort of the underpinnings of that and why that's important?
Yeah, so, you know, everyone wants their experience to be easy. Everyone wants their experience to be effortless.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the interesting part is, you know, why do customers want that to be effortless? Well, mm-hmm. and the answer to that from a psychological viewpoint is that people effectively don't want to use their brain power to be able to figure things out.
Right.
And why? Well, because of evolution. Using energy is not a good idea on something that you don't need to use energy for.
Mm-hmm.
So we human beings have created ways of looking at things to create them to be easy. And two examples I would give you. One example is habits.
Right.
Human beings have created habits, things that they do repetitively. So they don't have to think about them.
Mm-hmm.
So think about the fact that you drive home and when you get off the motorway, you don't remember driving home.
Right.
You're not really thinking about those things.
Uh-huh.
So habits is one example. Just getting up in the morning, cleaning your teeth, you don't think about those things.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of customers have habits, and therefore identifying that where the habits are, what the cues are, becomes very important. The second area, and again, this is going to sound a bit highfalutin, but the second area is an area in psychology that's called heuristics.
Right.
So heuristic effectively is a rule of thumb.
Right.
Which basically says that people have developed many, many, many rules of thumb, many heuristics,
mm-hmm.
And those help us make decisions about things.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, again, so what does this mean for a customer experience? Well, it means that you need to understand what the customer is thinking, what heuristic they are using, what biases they are using, what rules of thumb they are using at different parts of your experience, so you can design a deliberate experience.
Right.
And an experience that therefore drives value.
And
So I
understand this sort of the thinking and conservation of energy sort of bit, and I understand the heuristic bits, and that's the sort of the hidden causes about why people want things to be easy. But you also kind of mentioned the unintended consequences. What is it that you mean by that? I mean, is that unintended consequences for them or for the businesses?
I think for both.
Right.
So the danger is that if you look at, say, one heuristic, which is what they call the availability heuristic.
Mm-hmm.
So that basically means that when we look at things, if we see a lot of things in the news, if a lot of one particular product is around the place, then we go, well, there are lots of these around, therefore they must be good.
Right.
Is effectively what we do. Now, that may be good for some people, but it doesn't make it good for all customers.
Right.
And therefore, the unintended consequences of that may be they end up buying the wrong product. So there are lots of unintended consequences, and the challenge is that with these unintended consequences, that's a problem for customers and for business, because effectively it goes back to they're not thinking deeply enough to understand the implications of what they are doing.
Right.
So we as DX professionals don't understand enough of what we are doing, and hence the going back to, you know, understanding it and therefore breaking through the glass ceiling, basically.
Okay, and could that be as simple as, you know, how some people say, you buy something or you use something from one company, and then for some reason the company tells you, oh, we do this as well, and they went, oh, I didn't know that you did that. And is that because you've just got into this groove and that you've formed this habit, and you just see the things that you see and you use, and therefore it reduces the visibility that you have of other things?
Yeah, so there's a whole concept around what's called the halo effect.
Right.
So the halo effect basically means that, so for instance, I love Apple.
Right.
I buy everything that... If Apple came out with a box of tissues next week, I'd undoubtedly buy it. So, and that's exactly what you're describing there, is, you know, there's this halo effect that says that if you particularly like this type of brand, then you tend to go with this, go with the brand. If you see lots and lots of people that are buying things, you know, that again, that goes back to the availability of things. So there are a number of heuristics.
Okay.
And what we outline in the book are just some of the main ones that drive customer experience.
Okay, perfect. Well, that's great. So that's imperative five, which is, you know, fascinating. Then the next one that stood out was the one towards the end, actually, was imperative seven. And it says, realize the only way to build customer loyalty is through customer memories. So can you tell me a little bit about that and kind of what that means and why it's important for, you know, people developing their customer experience?
Yeah, this is probably the most significant thing that I've discovered over the last 5 years.
Okay.
And that is that without, if you think about loyalty.
Yeah.
Loyalty is a function of memory.
Yes.
And therefore, if we didn't have memory, we couldn't have loyalty, because every experience that we ever had would be new.
Yeah.
And therefore, loyalty is a function of memory. So by definition, if you want to gain loyal customers, what you've got to do is you've got to create a positive memory of that experience.
Right.
So the next question becomes, how do you create a positive memory? And the answer is there's a guy called Professor Daniel Kahneman, who's won a Nobel Prize for behavioral economics.
Yeah.
And he says that what people remember in an experience is they remember what he calls the peak end rule.
Right.
So the peak end rule.
Mm-hmm.
The peak end is the peak. What's the peak emotion that they feel during an experience?
Uh-huh.
And what's the end emotion that they feel during an experience?
Yeah.
And endings are incredibly important. And here's the real killer line for me. And the killer line for me is, people don't choose between experiences. They choose between the memory of an experience. So therefore, creating a memory becomes absolutely critical. And that's done through the peak end rule, creating a peak emotion, creating an end emotion. And again, the reality is that's happening today.
Yeah.
But people aren't in control of it, and people don't think about it deliberately.
I mean,
and the key word is deliberate.
And it that reminds me of a saying that I love that I've used with different people, and it comes from Maya Angelou, the American writer and poet, and she said something like, people will seldom remember what you did or what you said, but they will always remember how you made them feel.
Correct. Yes. And no, absolutely. So it absolutely ties back to emotions. Now, you know, the peak end rule, again, peak emotion, the peak emotion could be a positive emotion or it could be a negative emotion.
Yeah.
But clearly what you want it to be is a positive emotion. But by having this very conversation, it means that you've got to think about it.
Absolutely.
It means that you've got to design it. It means that you've got to think about how you're going to implement it and train people and all those other wonderful things.
Absolutely. So this is all kind of, this is all brilliant. And I mean, and so we've just talked briefly about sort of two, and there's another five in imperatives, but then a lot more sort of research and science and all those sort of things in the book. So it's very, you know, it's very rich. But let's kind of bring it down to sort of like if like brass tacks, and because actually some people go like, well, that's all very well, that's all very well and good, but
sure,
you know, where does the rubber hit the road? So I mean, would it, could you kind of give me a couple of examples of sort of firms or brands that are using these type of behavioral economics or psychological insights in their approach to improve customer experience, and what they've been doing and what sort of benefits they've been seeing, just to make it real?
Yeah, sure. The main one that I've mentioned already is Apple.
Right.
You know, I'm not sure if you're aware, but Apple have tried to patent the curves on a smartphone.
Have they really?
If you look at their what, how they train their genius people.
Right.
They train their genius people on how to identify verbal and non-verbal clues of people, and you know, create a positive, and therefore creating a positive memory.
Yeah.
So you know, to be totally honest with you, it's all the usual suspects. It's people like Ritz-Carlton, you know, who look at and understand customers at a much deeper level. You know, it's all the usual suspects of all of the great experience companies.
Yeah.
Now, whether they can put a label on them that says that's the availability heuristic or that's the familiarity heuristic is a different kettle of fish.
Yeah.
But there's such a rich wealth of academic data on why human beings do things. The other area that's becoming a really big area that a lot of the software vendors are getting into now is this whole area about predictive analytics.
Yeah.
So being able to look at data and predict what customers are saying. Again, your listeners would have heard of sentiment analysis.
Yeah.
You know, those types of things, putting all those things together to enrich what and understand customers at a much deeper level. So, you know, a lot of the leading companies are looking at this emotion piece, but the reason I say that I think this is the most significant book I've written for some time is because I really think that this is going to push people's thinking onwards from that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that strikes me is that as well as because you mentioned predictive analytics, and there's a lot of talk about big data and analytics and AI and robotics and automation and stuff, and I guess what it seems to like to me is that the behavioral economics and psychological insights, you know, the answers, there's clues in the big data, but actually the insights are almost like a filter with which you should be looking at the data. And that's almost like an extra level of learning and insight that you need to sort of like get up to speed with to be able to get increased value out of some of the information that you've got to hand. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. The issue is, well, okay, a couple of things here. So first issue is there's a big hole in big data, and the big hole is people have got very limited data on how the customer is feeling.
Yes.
And therefore this whole emotional part of an experience, which we know is over 50% of a customer's experience, is how they feel.
Right.
So the big hole in big data is that we don't know how customers are feeling. What we can do is we can look at the data and interpret by customers' behavior what and why they are doing things and go down to this next level that we're talking about in the book of interpreting why they're doing things and then being able to predict what they're going to do next.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes the key. So the key word for me here is, you know, interpretation.
Yeah.
You can look at data. It's how do you interpret that, which becomes key.
Okay, that's. I mean, it's perfect. I mean, it's because, yeah, no, it seems to be a big thing. So it almost it feels like if you're going to take an almost traditional analytical techniques and you apply them to big data and so on and so forth, you're still going to potentially hit the glass ceiling, and you still have to kind of take on the behavioral econ and the psychological and neuroscientific insights to be able to take you through the glass ceiling.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you're totally spot on. You've got to understand, you know, again, if you, the way I always describe this is, it's a bit like when back in the day when people used to think the Earth was flat.
Yeah.
When they thought the Earth was flat, they used to look at the world and go, right, therefore that means we need to do this, 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 and this, because the Earth is flat.
Mm-hmm.
When they found out the Earth was circular, then suddenly the evidence changed.
Yeah.
Same applies here. Everyone's looking at things just from a rational perspective. You need to look at things from an emotional, subconscious, psychological perspective. And when you do, you'll realise, you know, what you need to do to break through that glass ceiling.
Yeah. So, Colin, if I said to you, kind of if just sort of giving some people that might be thinking about this and thinking about breaking through that glass ceiling and adding some of these, you know, the behavioral economic sort of insights into their business to improve their customer experience, if you were to give them some top tips or some top pointers of where to start, apart from buying your book, obviously, what would you say to them?
I think the first thing to do, apart from buying the book, is to just start to question why are they personally doing things.
Right.
So, you know, one of the great ways of you finding out about why you do things is just to question, you know, why did I buy that? Why did I go into this restaurant or whatever it may be? And then you can start to, reveal the fact that you don't just do things that are logical.
Right.
And human beings are actually very illogical.
Uh-huh.
And therefore, start to look into that and embrace that. And once you've done that personally, then start to look at what your customers are doing and questioning what they are doing. And, you know, there's loads of resources out there in terms of YouTube and various different things where there's a lot of good information on. I think that's the key for me. And, you know, the other part is just being open-minded, really. And recognizing that at the moment, too many people think the Earth is flat.
Yes, no, indeed. And so, because I mean, I think that you're making up a great point where, and I have this phrase. I talk about this sort of this Jekyll and Hyde syndrome, where you know we're all customers, we're all consumers, we're all clients at different times in our lives. You know, particularly when we're not working. But yet when we seem to cross the threshold of a business, we tend to do other things, things to different to how we would expect them to be done to us. And so, I mean, it's almost a bit like you're suggesting use yourself as a focus group of one to better understand how people do things and why they do things.
Yeah. I mean, it for me, it goes back to that, you know, I mean, simple things like I'm going to jump on a lift or an elevator and I press the button 7 times. And, you know, the reality is that the lift's not going to come any faster.
Yeah.
So why did I do that?
Yeah.
That's not logical.
No.
So it's building on those things.
Excellent. So, Colin, is there anything else you'd like to add about the book that we've kind of missed out before I ask you kind of a couple of final kind of questions?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, as I've been hopefully doing here, it uses lots of sort of practical examples of how these things manifest themselves. So, you know, just although we're talking about behavioral economics, don't be scared. I think it's essential that people understand all this stuff.
Okay. Now, so my penultimate question, which is a bit of a selfish one, but I've been asking this over the course of the last kind of few months now, because so I wrote a book, or had a book published rather earlier this year called How to Wow. And what I've been doing is asking people sort of two things. Is one, what does WOW service and experience mean to you? And what do you think firms should be doing to help them get closer to being able to deliver that?
I think it's things we've been talking about.
Right.
Obviously, when you say wow, that means by definition that you are, you've seen something or experienced something that's more, that's exciting.
Yes.
That has caused you, you know, even that involuntary action of saying the word wow. And therefore, it goes back to all of the things that we've been talking about here. It goes back into you are, by definition, evoking an emotion in a customer. And, you know, ideally that would have been done in a positive manner, you know, or deliberate manner, should I say. And therefore, you know, that for me is the output that you're trying to get to. The interesting question becomes to create that wow. You know, what is it you need to do? And I guess that's where the two things meet. And the book starts outlining how to get to that wow.
Excellent. So thank you for that. So that brings me to my final question that I always ask at the end of these interviews. And it is this. Is there anything that you would like to shamelessly plug?
I think one thing that could help people is that we, if you go onto our website, which is www.beyondphilosophy.com, then if you go to where our books are, you'll find that there is a self-assessment form for, or self-assessment that you can take to understand where you are against the seven imperatives.
Okay.
And it will also give you how you're performing against, so it's a benchmark, how you're performing against everybody else that's taken the self-assessment. So hopefully that will give you a sense of where you are today and, you know, what the areas are that you need to focus on.
Perfect. So, Colin, thank you very much for that. I'll make sure we get this all edited up and linked up and things and give you in the book a big shout out. So, but first of all, congratulations on the book and thank you for your time and sharing your insights and experience with us today.
No, it's been great. Thank you very much. It's been most enjoyable.